Hello, and welcome to Vet Chat with us. I'm your host, Sarah Stead, and we have a very important episode today all about how to financially invest in your future when the cost of living is exploding. My guest for this episode is Lyndon Davis, a financial advisor, senior vice president from the Detroit metropolitan area, and published author of the book, Air Supply, How to Financially Breathe Easier, which is available on Amazon. Welcome, Lyndon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me, Sarah.
Before I jump into questions, I just want to remind all our listeners that this podcast is now available on Apple and Spotify. So thank you, Lyndon, because, you know, we just had some crazy technical difficulties. Thank you for bearing with me. But I'm very excited to just talk to you about all these things, because I know that a lot of the veterinary professionals and vet students who follow us are very concerned about debt and very concerned about what their future is going to look like just after they graduate, no matter what job they get. So I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about yourself and where you got your expertise from.
Surely. So I actually was trained formally as an engineer, an electrical engineer with a computer science minor. And I worked as an engineer doing hardware development and then software development. And then the very last assignment that I took on was doing calibration development for the big trucks at General Motors. And after that stint was complete, I actually went and got additional training and certifications and licensure as a financial advisor. And that's about 16 years ago now that I went to get that new career started. What allows me to operate as a financial advisor beyond the training, beyond all of the formal FINRA and New York Stock Exchange and all of that, is the ability to interface with clients to help them do one thing and one thing only, and that is to meet their goals. I exist to help my clients meet their goals. And I have to say, over the past 16 years, judging by the responses from my clients, it has gone very, very well for them. And in addition to being a financial advisor, I'm also a dad. I'd have to reserve judgment as to whether I'm a good dad or not after you guys ask my kids. And I also volunteer with my local church and various other community organizations.
That's awesome. So how would a vet student meet their goal of being a practice owner or being managing their own practice if they were not sure if they should rent or they should buy? What would you say? Like, what should they do?
How would they be able to meet that goal, renting or buying? Well, so it comes down to where they are and where they would like to be. So if a promising vet is saddled with debt or they have a ton of obligations, then purchasing a practice, going wholeheartedly into a practice, that becomes a bit daunting. So it would be better for them to actually look at renting. And by renting, I mean tying up with another practice, working for someone else, working for an organization or something along those lines. Because if you think about it, if you have obligations from school, and let's say that you may be starting a family and so forth, it becomes really a huge endeavor to say that you're going to invest the time and the capital to say that you're going to go buy a business. Now, if on the other hand, you are actually somewhat established, maybe you've worked already with a veterinarian practice, or perhaps you worked in some other healthcare field or some other career prior, and you're now deciding that, hey, I really want to get into this veterinarian space and so forth. Well, there you may have built up a certain amount of capital. You may have built up a certain amount of assets, and you may be more stable in your professional life. There it would make sense, if you're thinking about long-term being in the veterinarian space, it would make sense there to say that I'm going to look to buy. But until you figure out where you are and ultimately where it is that you'd like to be, you really will be left with that question. And I would say, figure out first and foremost, where are you? And then we can look at mapping out where it is that you would like to be.
So if somebody is thinking of doing either and they're still in school, what are some tips that you can give them to sort of plan ahead?
Still in school and planning ahead. And planning is really the key. You know, as we say in this space, you want to plan the work and then work the plan. So someone who's still in school, who's thinking about it, I would say, you know, do one of two things. Reading, absolutely. You absolutely want to get yourself educated about the space that you're about to enter. So whether that's online articles, it's books, it's publications, read. Well, what may even be better than reading is experiencing. And the way you get the experience, to me, one of the best ways that doesn't cause a whole lot of disruption, either to your schedule or to someone else's, is to do what I call a shadow day. A shadow is where you follow someone around. I mean, if you think about your shadow, it's kind of hard to escape it, right? Wherever you go, your shadow goes with you. And it's a similar kind of setup. You know, you get with an established vet or practice and ask them, can I shadow you for a day? And what you do by shadowing someone is you get to see the clientele that they're dealing with, the patients that they're handling. Perhaps you might also get to see some interaction with the patient's owners and so forth. And by so doing, you get a real world view as to what a day in the life of a veterinarian might be. And then if they're really generous, if they're really, really generous, then you may also want to ask them to give you some exposure on the business side of things. And what do I mean by that? Well, there might be medical claims that need to be processed. There might be insurers that need to be called or contacted. There might be that nagging customer that refuses to pay their bill on time. And you have to find out how best to let them know that, hey, you got the service, now it's time to pay. That's the business end of things that necessarily has to come along with being a veterinarian. Now, if you're in a big practice, somebody else typically does all of that. But if you're going solo, if you have a small partnership or something along those lines, that's something that absolutely has to be done by the owners and the proprietors. So that would be, Sarah, the best way to get a view into what the future of being a veterinarian is like, or being in animal health sciences, is to do a shadowing for a day. At least.
Yeah, for sure. And how early would somebody start to do this? Like, do you think, like, you know, it's fair to start thinking ahead first year of university, or is it something that can be processed later on? Like, you can make those decisions a bit later on.
I would lean more toward making those decisions later on, and primarily because many of us, when we're 17, 18, 19, we don't know our left hand from our right foot. And, you know, we might want to be a doctor the first year, and by the second semester, we want to be a teacher. And by the third semester, we just want to go comb the beaches of the Riviera. So I would say, give it some time, you know, let perhaps the prerequisites be gotten under your belt first. And then once you figure, you know what, yeah, I think I have a real interest in the veterinarian sciences or the animal healthcare space, that would be the point that I would say, yes, you might want to look into that shadow opportunity. And, you know, dig a little bit deeper. Absolutely.
Yeah. And start saving, I guess. I mean, that's the thing, right? Because there's debt and then saving at the same time. Those two things kind of like don't make sense together, or they're very difficult to do together. So yes. What do you suggest when that comes up?
Ha! I have a saying, piff, otherwise poof. And everyone knows what poof is. You see it in the comic strips, right? All of a sudden, poof, and something disappeared. Where did it go? And that's exactly what happens to your money if you don't piff. What do I mean by piff? Pay yourself first. P-Y-F. Pay yourself first. If you don't pay yourself first, everybody else gets paid, and your money goes poof. Goes into thin air. You don't know what happened to it. You don't know where it went and so forth. You want to get in the habit of doing that. But before you do that, there are some steps prior. First and foremost is you need to get what I call a dash to the stash. If you have a car, if you're in a home, or if you have an apartment, something will go wrong. Something is going to break down. And if you don't have the money set aside to deal with that broken down item, you're going to find yourself going deeper into debt in order to handle that emergency. So I say you need to have a stash ready to help in that undesirable, but yet we know it's going to happen. Everybody, every one of us experiences it at some point in time. So typically the repair for a car or the repair to to take care of an appliance, say like a refrigerator or something like that, or if you're in a home, it might be a furnace. Typically, those repairs run right around $1,000. So I would say get $1,000 set aside immediately. And I do mean even as a student, start putting, because students get emergencies. It's not like an emergency says, oh, that's a student. Let's just leave them alone. Let's move on to the, no. Emergencies happen to everyone. So even as a student, get at least $1,000 set aside. So now that you have your emergency stash set aside, you then want to have REM. REM, as you know, is rapid eye movement, which allows you to sleep easy at night. So then I say, in order for your REM to be sweet, you need to have your MEM complete. What is MEM? MEM is maintenance emergency money. So your dash to the stash got you that first $1,000 that helps you take care of an emergency. Your maintenance emergency money, your MEM money, that helps you sustain through elongated emergencies. For instance, what if you got hit by a vehicle or something, and now you're in the hospital for 3 months? You're not in school and you're not working. But your bills didn't say, oh, gee, Lyndon is stuck in the hospital. Let's not bother him today. No, your bills are going to say, pay me. Well, how are you going to pay them? You're flat on your back in the hospital. That's where your maintenance emergency money kicks in. It'll help sustain you in an emergency, whether that be 3 months, 6 months. It depends upon what will allow you to sleep easy at night. So again, if you want your REM to be sweet, you need to have your MEM complete. So for some people, 3 months is all they need. They, you know, I'm Superman. I'm going to be out of that hospital in 3 months. Fine. Have 3 months of expenses, not income. Expenses, 3 months set aside so that you can deal with that undesirable event that may cause you to be not earning any income or moving more toward completing your degree. For some other people, it could be 6 months. For other people, it could be 12 months. Whatever allows you to sleep easy at night, that is your maintenance emergency money. And you need to have that set aside so that if, God forbid, that event does occur, you will be maintained through that emergency. And then you can continue going back to PIF. Otherwise, poof, pay yourself first.
Wow. I love, like, you have all these sayings or like these acronyms, I guess. I don't even know to like remember these big important decisions that we have to make when it comes to our finances. It makes it way more fun and way more easy to remember. So then once you're done doing all of those, you're saying your pay yourself first would be something like a practice. Would that be a savings that we can consider for that?
Well, you know, the pay yourself first works well both ways. So if you're looking to, say, acquire a practice or open a practice, if you've been putting aside your stash and you've been putting aside your MEM money and so forth, that's going to build capital that you can potentially use in order to secure a practice. Now, it's not advisable that you do that, but the point here is that the habit is formed that you're always putting aside, you're always something on the side. So that if you're actually at that place now where you're like, I think I want to buy a practice, or I want to expand my practice, or I want to invest. You could do that too. I want to invest in another practice. You forming that habit of always paying yourself first, putting something aside, puts you in a beautiful position to where you can have the capital ready at hand to deploy in either of those scenarios. So yes, it is something throughout life you should be doing this.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I was wondering, like, what is a good investment to combat exploding cost of living?
Yeah, exploding cost of living. So what history has taught us is that things go in cycles. Or if you like circles, they go in circles. And that is, you start with the good life, and then something bad happens, and then you fight your way back up to the good life. Things go in circles or cycles. It's going to happen. And one of the things that we have learned is that when things start going bad, that is, inflation is rising, costs are spiraling, real estate does oh so well. That is one of those things that just because inflation goes up, it just says, you know what? I want to take a ride on your coattail. Pull me up, pull me up. Real estate, a great place to be for exploding costs. Another area which is not so readily, I guess, digestible by folk is precious metals. What do I mean by precious metals? Yeah, you know, palladium, gold, rubidium, silver, all of those different things there. And I'm not telling you to get one over the other. I'm saying look at precious metals. Ever since the Garden of Eden, people have valued precious metals. And long into the future, people will still be valuing precious metals. So it makes sense, especially when things are spiraling out of control on the cost side, for you to have some precious metals in your possession. And then one of the last areas, because of the nature of the business, are in things like financials, insurance companies, banks, lenders of various kinds, lending institutions. And why? Because think about it, Sarah. The interest rate is going up to match inflation, right? Who benefits from interest rates going up? Banks, mortgage rates are on the rise, auto loan rates are on the rise, credit card rates are on the rise. Those are all instruments that banks offer. So if those things are going up, it would make sense for you to put some capital into banks, financial institutions. So again, it's not maybe tasteful to say that, which one of these and so forth. But if you really want to fight against inflation, against exploding costs, you want to put your capital in any one or all three of those areas, because over time it has shown that they do very well when costs are rising.
No, that's great to know. Thank you. I don't think many of us are as familiar with those things. And we also struggle sometimes when it comes to even just saving enough money to be able to invest later on. So can you give us some practical tips on just how to save?
So what you just said there, Sarah, real key, and that is we struggle to save. We struggle to save. Here's yet another saying. If discipline is the entree of the meal ticket to prosperity, then accountability is the secret sauce. If discipline is the entree of the meal ticket to prosperity, then accountability is the secret sauce. What do I mean? Well, let's take something real mundane. I want to lose 10 pounds. Who doesn't? Everybody wants to lose 10 pounds, right? Who takes the discipline to get up every morning at the same time, drag yourself out of bed, get to the gym, spend an hour and a half, drink those healthy, green, nasty-looking smoothies, although they do taste great, by the way, I've tried it, and then eat salads instead of potato chips and fries? Sarah, that takes discipline. It takes discipline. And those that stick to the discipline, they get to lose the 10 pounds. But the rest of us that decide, you know what, McDonald's is a good option right now, and yes, I do want another slice of cake, those of us that actually take that path, we find it in that perpetual cycle of wanting to lose weight, but not losing weight. The exact same thing with money. If we don't have the discipline to say that, hey, I'm actually going to do this, I'm going to make this happen, then you need accountability. And if that accountability, you can't find it within yourself, then you need to get yourself an accountability partner. Who would that be? Two criteria. Somebody that you respect and someone that you'd hate to let down. Someone you respect and someone you'd hate to disappoint. That is the best person to be that accountability partner for you. Various organizations throughout the world have tried the accountability method, and it is found to be the most effective at helping people who have a difficult time. And folks, you don't necessarily have to pay for this. This could be a coworker, you know, a good friend who you look up to. It could be a mentor. The point is, if you're having difficulty putting aside that money, even in your career, if you're trying to, you know, get that promotion, or if you're trying to actually get the business owner, the chief veterinarian and so forth to recognize your work and so forth, but you're having a hard time following through on some of the assignments, getting that accountability partner, that person that's going to hold you to account for meeting those goals, is really one of the best, it is the most effective ways of meeting your goals. So again, to answer your question, what are some practical tips for saving? I'd say truly start by paying yourself first. Doing a spending analysis, which is looking at where you're spending your money. And I'll talk more about that in a second. And then holding yourself accountable or having someone hold you accountable. That is where you start. Now I'll pause here to see if you have another question, but I do want to get more into the spending analysis because that is an eye opener.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to hear more about that. My other follow-up question was really just like, you know, once you've, I guess, been disciplined and saved money, how do you decide on where, if you're going to pay that, use that to pay your debt, or if you're going to just keep it in your savings? Like, that's something that I know a lot of veterinarians struggle with. They have massive debt, but they also want to make sure that they're probably saving at the same time or enjoying themselves and their lives and feeling like they can do both. So yeah, how do you decide what to do there?
The wisdom of Solomon, knowing when to split the baby, when to do a little bit of this and do a little bit of that. And it's really difficult because, you know, you've been in school, you've been working hard. Yeah, you got the mountains of debt, but you also got a decent income. And I really, really want to pay down that debt, but I really, really want to enjoy the fruits of my labor. What do you do? Well, let's split the baby. So what I suggest to people that they do is try as quickly as possible to pay off the debt. Because it's like an albatross around your neck. It's like a weight holding you down when you have to look at, gee, there's this thing waiting for me. Whether I'm feeling up or feeling down, that debt is always there waiting for me. And that's not a good feeling. So I encourage people to pay that thing off as quickly as possible. But I also recognize that, hey, I would like to live. So the way you split the baby is this. You allocate a certain amount of money. It's what I call the debt domino system. You allocate a certain amount of money to your debts in a priority order. And as you pay off one debt, instead of going out and partying with your friends, you use that payment now to pay the next debt. And then once that's paid off, you use the payment that you paid on the first and second debt to pay the third debt, and so on and so on. But here's where splitting the baby comes good. You might get money back from your tax return. You might get a bonus. You might get some unexpected money that came, you know, you overpaid your insurance. That's where you split the baby. That's where I say, you know what? Take 20, 30, 40, or 50%, whatever you're comfortable with, and go live a little. And take that other percentage and attack that debt. That way you're achieving both of the things that are really, really on your mind. You're achieving both of them at the same time. You're getting rid of that mountain of debt, but you're also enjoying your life. I'll tell you one story about that. I had this one client had 100,000. Yes, folks, that's one with five zeros after it. Had $100,000 worth of debt, and that did not even include their student loans. And they came to me because they're both making a good income, but they are frustrated that they can't seem to knock this debt down. I put them on this program that I just told you about prioritizing their debt and attacking them one at a time and so forth. But here's the kicker, and it works really well with two incomes. I said, what you guys are going to want to do is live off of one income. What was that? Yeah, live off of one income. Take the higher earner's income and use that to pay all of the household bills, the lights, the gas, the groceries, the travel, the cleaners, all. Use that income to pay everything. And then use the other income strictly for the debt. Strictly attack the debt with that. Now, in a perfect world, Sarah, in a perfect world, we'd actually use the lower income to live on and the higher income to attack the debt. And I'll tell you why in a second here. So they did that. And I told them, guys, look, in about 24 months, you will have the entire $100,000 paid off. They looked at me like I was loony. And well, I guess they were right because we didn't pay it off in 24 months. We didn't. We actually paid it off in 26 months. Paid off. Here's the kicker as to why you need to try to live on the lower income as opposed to the higher income. 4 months after that, husband lost his job. she got a promotion to where her income was almost the same as what his was when he lost his job. Sarah, do you think they know how to live on one income at this point? Yeah, yeah, they do. And that's exactly what happened. They were able to sustain themselves for an additional 5 months while he was out looking for work. They were able to sustain themselves because they had trained themselves to live on one income. And if it was the lower income, then they would have been golden because his income would have gone away because he got laid off. But hers being lower would have still been fine because that's what they were living on. So strive to live, if it's two incomes in the household, strive to live on the lower one. If it's just one, you got to get that stash, dash to the stash, and then you got to get the mem complete so your rem can be sweet, because if a layoff happens, the money will be there to help sustain you. That's a real typical example of how putting things in order gets you to meet your goals.
Yeah, that's that story is incredible. I mean, like, I can't even imagine just how they felt when they were able to pay off all that debt. And I know for like another thing that kind of comes with debt for a lot of these vets is like a lot of mental health issues and struggles and pressures, because in addition to them having to pay off these bills, they also are working with animals where they see, you know, sick animals and have to take care of them. And it's compassion fatigue at the same time. Yeah. So the pressures come from everywhere. Do you have any advice for how to deal with that pressure financially as well?
You know, my dentist, he's been my dentist for about 28 years now. And it just so happened maybe about 14, 15 years ago, I just happened to ask him, because, you know, don't know that much about dentistry and so forth, you kind of get this weird notion that your dentist actually cleans his own teeth. He goes in and drills his own root canal. And that's ludicrous, right? It's just ludicrous. So I decided, all right, okay, I don't know. And that is really ridiculous to say he's cleaning his own teeth. So I asked him, what do you do when you need dental services? And he says he has a good buddy who's also a dentist that he goes to him to actually get his teeth looked at. When it comes to the mental health and the emotional well-being of veterinarians, especially when you're dealing with traumatic cases, and sometimes the animal might actually be owned by a young child, and that compounds things because you don't want to see them hurting, and you don't even want to see the animal in the condition that it is and so forth. And you need to get that release somewhere. You need to get that somehow. And I would say, just like my dentist, I think the very best thing to do is a commiseration session. Speak with another veterinarian, perhaps more seasoned than you, to let them know that this is what you're going through. Quite often, there is nothing that you have seen that they haven't already been through. And they can give perspective. They can be a listening ear, just so that you can offload all of that you've been building up and so forth. Now, folks, this is real critical, because your mental and your emotional well-being quite often affects your finances. It may even affect your practice. So you really do need to find that shoulder to lean on, so that the pressures and the trauma of it all doesn't overwhelm you. I mean, animal sickness, customer sadness, the insurance is not paying on time, other customers are not paying on time, you know, you have high costs, inflation and so forth. That's a lot of stuff coming at you. Now, we might be able to help you, you know, deal with some of that money aspect, but you really do need someone who actually is in the space that you're in, another vet or someone else who is closely aligned with the work that you're doing, to be a sounding board, someone that you can actually commiserate with, for lack of a better term. And that really, it goes a long way toward clearing up those issues, so that you can then get back in the game and tackle the issues that you face from day to day.
Yeah, that's so true. It's mental health is like so important, and it affects everything, especially when you're running a business, for sure. Yeah, and thank you so much, Lyndon. We definitely have more questions for you, and we'll be back after the sponsored message.
Hey everyone, I'm here to show you guys some more information about our free webinar happening. In this webinar, we're gonna teach you guys the top 3 secrets that you guys won't learn anywhere else. You don't wanna miss out on the opportunity to learn from our very own Erlyn Sharp, personal branding specialist and director of online learning and training. And the one, the only, Nicole LaForest, licensed veterinarian technician and epidermologist. Now, suppose you're a student or a young veterinarian who wants to learn how to make a professional digital CV. This masterclass is for you. Or maybe you're a practice owner who went through a really hard time during the pandemic and just don't know how to market themselves. Well, this free masterclass is for you. In the webinar, Erlyn will teach you the top 3 secrets of how to market yourself to become extremely successful. Oh, and did I mention it was free? Don't forget to click the link to register, and you can get a chance to win a free iPad. That's right. I said free, free iPad. So I can't wait to see you guys at the free webinar, and who knows, you might be the one to win the free iPad. See you guys there.
Welcome back to Vet Chat with us. If you're joining us now, we have a financial expert, Lyndon Davis, with us speaking on how to financially invest in your future when the cost of living is exploding. Just before our message, Lyndon was speaking to us about debt, and we were talking about the toll it can often take on us all. And he was also talking about something called spending analysis. So I don't really know what that is, Lyndon, but I would love for you to tell us.
Well, I tell you, even though we don't get taught about money formally in school, whether it's grade school, middle school, high school, and even for nowadays, we don't get much of it in college. The one thing we all know how to do is spend. No one has to teach even a little toddler how to spend. We all know how to do that. We are experts at spending. Maybe we should get our PhD in spendology. I don't know. But what are you spending on? Where's the money going? The way we find that out is through a spending analysis. It is a dive. It could be deep or it could be shallow, but it's a dive into where is it that you spend. And the good thing is that today most people do most of their spending with plastic, either their debit card or their credit card. And I know the rise of digital payments through, you know, digital wallets, you know, like Square and Zelle and Venmo and PayPal and so forth. I know that's on the rise. But the bulk of the spending is done with plastic. Either way, whether by plastic or whether through digital payments, that spend has been captured digitally and is then reflected on a statement. So what we do, and it's a service that we provide, is we actually ask for 2 months of your statements, whether it's your credit card, your digital payments, or whether it's your debit card. We ask for 2 months of that spend, and we then run through to see, what did you spend on? What we find, and Sarah, I mean it, people talk about, oh, I don't spend much. You know, I don't go anywhere. I don't eat out. You know, I don't buy. You know, I might just, you know, pick up a little blouse or a pair of jeans here, but I really don't spend. They all say that. But their bank accounts show something very different. Very, very different. For instance, I had one person tell me, oh, no, I don't eat out that much and so forth. And come to find out, they were spending $400 a month eating out. McDonald's, Chipotle, Burger King, Dunkin' Donuts. I'm like, you cannot be serious. How do you spend $400 a month? But yeah, they were actually doing that. That spending analysis gives us a wonderful insight into where your money is going. I had this one client in particular, and he was spending. Now, mind you, I wouldn't consider him a profligate spender by any means, but he was spending $1,000 a month, mind you, on an income of right around $5,000 a month. So a full 20% of his income, he was spending on alcohol and cigarettes. Two things that's actually pushing him closer to the grave than to getting a raise. And he had no clue. He thought he was just an occasional smoker, an occasional drinker. $1,000, fully 20% of his entire household income was going towards cigarettes and alcohol. And I'm not judging anybody who might be into that. I'm judging the, we don't know where our money's going. We spend and spend, but we don't know. So the spending analysis allows us to look at where the money is going, and more importantly, what opportunities are there for saving. So for instance, this other person that I worked with, she was an administrator at a local hospital. and she was spending $200, and I'm using the term loosely, she was giving away $200 a month in bank fees. In bank fees. Now, I don't care where you're spending your money. One thing I am certain, you don't need to be giving the bank any more money unnecessarily. So that allowed us to say to her, listen, you're giving away $200 every month unnecessarily. That can go towards your retirement. It can go towards the purchase of another home. It could go toward a car, $200 a month. And this was about 7-8 years ago. So by doing so, we're able to uncover where the money's actually going, but more importantly, where the opportunities are for saving. So, you know, just to highlight the point a little bit more, Sarah, you know, let's just say that you came to me and said, Lyndon, you know what? I make a pretty decent income, but I would like to do more with my money. Could you help me figure out where it is I'm spending? And if by doing that analysis, we determine that you can get another 150 so that you can go on vacation, a mini vacation every month. Well, Sarah, think about how much your life can be improved just by that one simple exercise. And we're doing the work. We're doing the work to find it out. Now that discipline thing kicks in again. It's now back to you whether you want to put in the energy to save in those areas that you're spending unnecessarily so that you can meet your goals. But that's what a spending analysis does. It allows us to look at where you're spending so that we can uncover where that's happening, and more importantly, so that we can look at opportunities for saving more.
Yeah, I love that you are so good at breaking things down, because I feel like everybody, especially the younger generation, and I'm talking about myself, when you think about money, you just panic. Like your heart just panics and that's it. You don't know what to think, what to do. You're just like, I don't know, you're lost. And especially, so I'm from Toronto, and buying a house in Toronto is basically impossible for us young people. So, you know, when you're breaking things down like this and giving us practical ideas on how to properly decide where our money goes, I think that's such a great thing. So I appreciate that very much. But well,
the thing, as you're bringing that up, this also works for veterinarian practices. If they're constantly putting out bills, but not knowing where they're putting out their bill, let me give a nice short one. If someone is putting out a ton for, let's say, injectable medicines and so forth, and their analysis shows that they're getting 5 or 6 different types or from 5 or 6 different vendors, that alone might say to them, you know what? If we only sourced from 2 vendors, we might be able to get economies of scale. We might be able to drive the cost down by giving just those 2 vendors without sacrificing quality, mind you. We might be able to actually drive our costs down by limiting to 2 vendors instead of getting it from 5 and 10 different vendors. So this works just as well for the business as much as it works for your personal savings. So it's not something to just, you know, cast off as pie in the sky. It actually does help you get to where you're trying to get to.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm also curious to know, you know, in this climate, if you're dealing with a lot of financial difficulties and you're in a job that's not necessarily helping the situation, like, do you stay and suffer with that? Or do you think that it's better for somebody to decide, okay, I'm going to go and take another opportunity or take the risk to see if I can find another opportunity and switch jobs? Like, what are your thoughts when it comes to employment itself and decisions around that?
Yeah, and you know, I'll even come back to the veterinarian space too in dealing with this question. Should I stay or should I go? I mean, think about that weird personal relationship. I kind of like her, but you know what? I really don't want to be around her. Should I stay or should I? She makes me feel good on Tuesdays, but she makes me feel horrible on Wednesdays. Should I stay or should I go? It's the devil you know against the devil you don't know. Which devil am I going to connect up with? That's a good question. The best answer comes from, what do you want? What do you want? If by staying in the current job or current space that you're in, you are not getting to the goal that you've set for yourself, then it only makes sense that you look elsewhere to get to that goal. If by staying where you, or better yet, if by going somewhere else, it might actually set you back several levels, And it might take you even longer to just to get back to where you are, to even think about moving ahead, then you might want to stay. Where are you? What is it that you want to accomplish? So I would say to the young vet or to the young professional, whomever it might be, or even if you're in mid-career and so forth, you have to truly look at what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And if staying where you are is the best place for that, then you need to make the moves so that you can get to that place. For instance, when I changed from being a software developer to being a calibration developer, I had seen that I wasn't going any further as a software developer. I needed to make a change. My first desire was to go outside the company because I knew I'd get an instant 10% raise if I did that. It just so happened no one in our area was hiring at the time. But I didn't just sit there and say, oh, woe is me, twiddle my thumbs and so forth. No, I actually went to look at other opportunities within the company. No, I didn't get the 10% raise that I was hoping for, but I got the opportunity that I was looking for and thereby furthered my own professional development, my own professional desires that way. So that is key, knowing what it is that you want to do and then pursuing that, whether that be outside your current employer or whether it might be something within your current employer. And Sarah, the same thing occurs for a veterinarian practice. What do you do? Do you stay with your current practice? Do you buy another one? Yeah, times are tough, but times are always going to be tough. One of the things that actually makes tough times great times is that someone who may not act in normal times will act during a tough time. And that might be to your benefit. You might find somebody who actually needs to retire this year and it's a hard time for him to actually get rid of his business. He might be able to get it, sell it to you for a price that you want, maybe not a price that he wanted, but a price that you want that allows him to get away and get to his retirement, get to the thing that he wants. So the driving point here is, what do you want? What do you want? And don't let tough times be the thing that makes you paralyzed. Let it be something that makes you look for opportunities, because they're there and they're going to be there. You just got to look for them and take advantage.
Yeah, what do you want is a very big question, but it's very true. I totally agree with what you're saying. And I also want to know, like, when we're thinking about money and we're thinking about the decisions that we make and having all these choices to make with where do we put our finances and like having to control all that sometimes is stressful. But it's like, do costs control our money? Who's the boss of our money? Because sometimes it doesn't feel like we are, even though we try so hard to control it and we try so hard to figure out where everything should go. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh man, tell me about it, Sarah. You don't know how many times I hear people say, well, I can't make it to the birthday party because I've got to pay for this. Or I can't go out to the movies with you because I've just paid for my car or my cell phone or something. They're letting the costs and the various obligations of life, financial obligations of life, actually dictate what they can and can't do. And there's an age-old saying that is true today as it was back then, and that is, money makes an excellent slave, but a terrible master. It makes an excellent slave, but a terrible master. And I know, you know, that term slave, oh, you can't say that, but think of the terms of what I'm talking about. Let me say it better. Money makes an excellent servant, but a terrible boss. It makes an excellent servant, but a terrible boss. Think about what a servant does. A servant does what you ask the servant to do, whether that's your Uber driver, whether that's your butler, whether that's your gardener, your pool boy, or whomever it might be. You actually say to the Uber guy, I want to go to Fifth and Main. Well, it's not like the Uber guy is going to take you to Clark and Fifth Avenue. That's not going to get the job done. The servant does what it is that you tell them, whereas the boss, that boss tells you what to do. So if your money's saying you can't go to the movies, that is a horrible boss. If your money's telling you that you can't go on that vacation, I don't want to work for that boss. In fact, I want to be the boss. I want to be the one that dictates to my money where it ought to go and what it ought to be doing. So if you find yourself in that position where your money is always tight and restricting you and dictating to you what it is that you should be doing and so forth, then I'm going to ask you to do a paradigm shift, to rearrange your thinking. Think of yourself as the boss and think of your money as the employee. Now, here's the thing for you, Sarah. Here's another thing for you. Money ought to be your employee, not your boss. And if money has no job and it has no purpose, then it's lazy money, and lazy money will get wasted. Think about that. If I have an employee and I give them no job to do, or worse yet, I give them a job, but it's a job that has no purpose, no benefit whatsoever, what am I doing? I am wasting that employee's time. I'm wasting my time and resources. And that's exactly what you're doing with your money. If you don't give it a job, pay for my groceries, pay for my gas, pay for my lights, send me on vacation, get me a nice French bottle of wine, whatever it might be, you're telling your money what to do. And if it doesn't have a purpose, which is similar to, let's say, a fire extinguisher, that fire extinguisher sits in the corner just minding its business, twiddling its thumbs. What is it doing? It's waiting to be called on to go put out a fire. All the while, you don't want it ever to be employed. But if it is ever employed, you want it to do its job. The purpose of that fire extinguisher is to sit and wait until I need you. And your money may have a similar purpose, and that is sit on the side and wait until I'm ready to buy that practice, or sit on the side until I'm ready to invest in a new piece of equipment, or sit on the side until I'm ready to actually put you to work to marketing to, you know, more customers and so forth. If your money has that purpose, then you're being a good boss. If it has an actual job, you're being a good boss. But if your money has no job and no purpose, it's lazy money and it's going to get wasted. So be the boss of your money. Don't let costs or other things be the boss of you.
Wow. Yet another one that is super helpful. And thank you so much. I want to end off our podcast just getting to know a little bit more about you. We usually ask our speakers some questions at the end. My first question for you, though, is what is one lesson that your job has taught you that you think everyone should learn at some point?
The one thing that truly that was very amazing to me is that you cannot judge the book by its cover. Everyone can learn from that. You cannot judge the book by its cover. I was dealing with one person, they shall remain nameless, a surgeon, well over $400,000 in gross income. And that person did not have a dime saved, nothing saved, but he drove a luxury vehicle and he ate at fancy restaurants and he lived in an upscale neighborhood, but had nothing saved. Equally true, Sarah, I ran across a librarian. She has never cracked triple digits or six digits, never made that much in her life, and has over 2 million saved up. You cannot judge a book by its cover. You cannot look at that person and say that, well, this person is that kind of a person or that kind of a person. You need to spend time and get to know the person. As a veterinarian, somebody might actually walk through your door and they might look disheveled. They might look like they haven't cared for that animal. Until you find out why they look that way or why the animal looks as if it's in poor health and so forth, you can't make the judgment as to what's going on. You need to spend time trying to find out. Once you found out, you can make the appropriate judgments, but you can't just on face value on the initial, you can't make the judgment as to what type of person or what type of animal or what type of care was going on. The one thing this job has taught me, you cannot judge that book by its cover. No matter how sexy it looks or how disheveled it looks, you must spend time with that person or with your patient in order to figure out what's really going on.
That's amazing. And my last question for you is, what is the quote or philosophy that you live by every day? You definitely have a lot of them, so I could see you having a good one here.
The one thing that most people hear me say wherever they are is, I'm here to help. I'm here to help. Or a different way of saying that is, we are blessed to bless others. No one receives a blessing so that they can hoard it to themselves, hide it in the ground, put it aside and just coddle it and pet it and say, oh, what a nice blessing you are. We are blessed to bless others. Therefore, I'm here to help. If you receive wisdom, it's only prudent that you dispel that wisdom, that you don't just keep it to yourself. What good is that, really? What good is that? If you receive knowledge, it's only beneficial if you actually put that knowledge back out there. So I'm here to help. Or another way, we are blessed so that we can bless others. That's what I live by.
Wow. Thank you so much. It was so great to learn about all these different strategies that you have for financial saving, not only for veterinarians, just I feel like for everyone. Like, I definitely learned from this myself and Beautiful. Will be applying some of the things that you said. Yeah, no, it's like I said, it's a lot of times as younger people, you know, the second that money is mentioned, we get scared because we haven't really had the opportunity to learn, you know, in school or anything like that. Like, that would be a great class to have. Maybe you should teach one.
I'm here to help.
Yeah, there you go. And thank you. I really appreciate your time. And don't forget that everyone listening, that this is a monthly podcast. So look out for our next episode next month. And you can also sign up for our free webinar, which is taking place on August 18th on the top 3 secrets of how to market yourself in the veterinary field. You can click the link below to register. And in the upcoming webinar, you'll learn the why of the top 3 secrets with our director of online learning and training / personal branding specialist, Erlyn Sharp, and Nicole LaForest, who's a licensed veterinary technician and epidemiologist in Washington State. Our presenters will also teach you how these top 3 work in helping you to achieve your goals successfully. And it's free, so you definitely want to register. Plus, you can win a free iPad. Right? So why wouldn't you do it? Do it now. But yeah, thank you so much for your time, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you.